Hello. Thanks for joining us for this Sunday morning's teaching at Dayspring Fellowship. Sunday mornings at 10 a.m.
So, okay, a little bit about me. I am Lathan and Sarah's oldest son. Just finished my freshman year at the College of Charleston Honors. I meant semester, not year. Going great so far. And one of my favorite things is to, normally when I talk about it with my brother or sister, I call it ruining things. It's to point out common misconceptions we as society have about things. So, like, I have a few examples here. Lie detectors don't really work like we think they do. They don't actually detect lies. It's an awful name. Someone once used a lie detector to prove that plants have emotions and feelings and tell lies. So that's a piece of junk. The Secret Service was not made to protect the president. It was made to see if money is counterfeit or not. And there's never been a scientific study that has proven or even claimed that you actually need 8 glasses of water a day. That's a total myth. And so in that spirit, my message today about ruining things, I've been calling it Dunkin' Ruins Christmas, or Dunkin' Ruins the Nativity. So let's see how this goes. So I'm going to be talking about the Nativity story and some things that we all think about it and that we think are true, and we say, oh yeah, that's the truth every year, but it's just not. So if you could pull up, Shane, if you could pull up verses Luke 2, 4 through 7. Okay, here we go. Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David to be registered with Mary, his betrothed wife, who was with child. Next. So it was that while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered, and she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling cloths, and laid him in a manger, because there is no room for them in the inn. Okay, so this verse, a little bit of context. This is the story of when Jesus was born, as it's told in the chapter, Luke. The census was going on at the time, so Joseph had to take all his family, which at the time was Mary and the little baby inside her, not yet born. He had to take them all to the city where he's from to be registered for the census, you know, because the government needs to know stuff. And so they went there, and while they were there, Jesus was born. Yay. But the part I really want to focus on, go pull up verse 7 again. And laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. We all know that. Everyone knows there is no room in the inn. You know, they go, the innkeeper says, sorry, can't stay here, gotta go somewhere else, right? That's wrong. That's not what happened. So basically, in the Greek, the word there for inn is actually kataluma, K-A-T-A-L-U-M-A. And actually, that word can mean inn, but not usually. Here, it means main room or guest room. It's also used in Luke 22:11. Pull that one up. This is right before the Passover. Jesus is explaining what to do with the disciples. He says, then you shall say to the master of the house, the teacher says to you, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples? So here it's the exact same word, kataluma, and here it means guest room, because that's what it means back there. If he wanted to say in, if Luke, who wrote the books, wanted to say in, which he did, he would use the word, it's another Greek one, so let me find it here, because Greek words are all long and complicated and everything. Okay, I have it. I'm not going to pronounce this one right. Pandocheion. It's P-A-N-D-O-C-H-E-I-O-N. Pandocheion. That one is from Luke 10:34. Pull that verse up. Luke 10:34. Here we go. So this is the parable of the Good Samaritan. You know, the Good Samaritan's come. He's like, go find help. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. Here it says an inn, and it uses the word pandokion, because here Luke is actually saying an inn, like an actual hotel, which makes sense here, because think about it. If Joseph is going back home for the census and everything, this was Jewish society, and back then it was like all about family. Like, even, can you pull up verses 4 and 5 again? Into Judea, the city of David, called that because everyone there is like the family and lineage of David or whatever. It was all about family. So it doesn't make sense that Joseph would come into town with his family for the census and find some random hotel. Instead, he was trying to find room with his family, which makes sense. And this isn't just like my speculation or whatever. This isn't me just pulling stuff out of air and saying like, oh, maybe. This is all actually backed up by the Reverend Ian Paul, an evangelical scholar at the University of Nottingham. That's one actual, like, legitimate source I have, but you can just Google this all and confirm for yourself. Like, you can learn a lot about the Bible by looking at what Greek words are used where, because that's how it was originally written. Let me see what I say next on my notes. Okay. So they didn't try to stay at an inn. They tried to stay at the Cataluma, a guest room in their family's house. My next question is, so what? Why does that matter that they didn't try to stay at an inn? I mean, they didn't have room there anyways, regardless. So the point is, can you pull up 7 and 8, I think? And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger because there is no room for them in the inn. Yeah. Laid him in a manger. Okay, so from that, people usually think that Jesus was born in a stable. You know, all the famous nativity scenes where he's in a stable. Or maybe in a cave sometimes, right? That one also might not be true. The deal was, a manger, for anyone who doesn't know, that's where you put all the animals' food so they can go and eat and everything. It's literally a feeding trough. And so people from that think, okay, so they were in a stable or a cave or wherever one might keep the animals. Look at the very next sentence, verse 8. Now, there were in the same country shepherds living out in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. I have these two verses right next to each other to show that it happens at the exact same time, because it says now and night, which means Jesus was born at night, which the nativity gets right, the usual nativity we all hear. And this was Jewish custom. Again, you can Google this on your own, find out it's true. Back then, the Jewish custom was at night, sometimes they would keep the animals inside the house on the bottom floor. Cataluma, the guest floor, and the rooms where people sleep, normally like upper floors and everything. You guys, I think it's the Passover or maybe in Acts when it says they were meeting in the upper room or something, because that's where all the people stayed at houses. They were in the upper room. The bottom floor was for like utility, like kitchens, keeping animals, all that kind of thing. And in fact, at night, they did keep the animals in the kitchen, which again makes sense. If you're gonna, you know, make food out of the animal, then it makes sense to have it right there. You know, you don't want to take it everywhere in the house. And they did it at night, one, to keep them warm and everything, but also to prevent theft, because, you know, it's the census right now. Everyone and their mother and their brother, literally, they're all in town. You want to make sure your animals are safe, right? Yeah. So everyone has all their family around. You're like, there are a lot of people here. My animals might get stolen. So you take them in at night, which, you know, again, makes sense. But now, that means the animals were inside in the bottom floor at the kitchen, which means the manger came with them. This is all just because the Greek word kataluma, pull up 7 again, verse 7 and 8. Now, I'm going to read that first one again, verse 7. But when it says, in think spare room or guest room where people stay, and she, like Cataluma, and she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger because there is no room for them in the guest room. So what Luke is saying here, because it's nighttime, this is why he has the two verses right by each other to put it all in context for the reader, because in Greek, this translates in a way it doesn't mean in English. He's saying it was nighttime and they laid them in a manger, which means Jesus was born with all the animals in the kitchen. And he says there was no room for them anywhere else. These people, Joseph and Mary, they were literally staying in the kitchen because there weren't any rooms for them in any of the rest of the house. No catalumas or spare rooms. They were in the bottom floor where all the animals in the mangers were for who knows how long. Pull up 5 and 6. So it was that while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered. This doesn't say they got there and then that night Jesus was born. This says they were there in Bethlehem and then the days were completed. They could have been here for who knows how long. How long does it take to complete a census? I don't know. So they were here for who knows how long, staying in the kitchen because there were no spare rooms because everyone got there before them. You know, all the elders and everything. Again, Jewish custom. Elders are treated very highly, especially compared to Mary, the pregnant person when, you know, they're not exact, you know, I won't go into it, but you know. And so they're like, oh no, all the rooms are full, sorry. And then they get, and then they like give Joseph and Mary the side eye. The elders got here, you know, the elders, you know. And so that was the first misconception that I really wanted to point out, was that people always think stable or cave because it says manger. But in the context and actual Greek words, we can kind of see, and again, backed up by Ian Paul, Reverend Scholar in University of Nottingham, that it actually might have been the kitchen instead, in the middle of the census, which means there were kiddies and grandparents and aunts and uncles all running into the kitchen, you know, to get food any time of day. You know how kids are. I saw my mom. Yes. So that was the first one. And then the next one I wanted to do comes from a hymn. I think it's a hymn that we always sing, like, every Christmas. I'm glad we didn't do it this Christmas, because I was like, I might talk smack on it. I hope it's not going to be the centerpiece of worship. Pull up Away in a Manger, verse 2. Here we go. The cattle are lowing, the baby awakes, but little Lord Jesus no crying he makes. Da, da, da. That's a beautiful line, but it's not true. Nowhere in Luke, I mean, I looked back and forth all around the nativity, but it doesn't actually say in Luke Jesus didn't cry. This, whoever wrote this song, which then influenced society, and because, you know, everyone sings it every year. Everyone knows the song. And so people just hear this line and they're like, oh yeah, Jesus didn't cry. I remember that. I read that in the Bible. Trust me on this. But why wouldn't he cry? Like, yeah, it's beautiful, but why? Like, I'm not even sure if I put it on here. It's such a small verse. The smallest verse in the Bible. It's like, oh gosh. Do you know John 11:35? You can pull it up if you want, John 11:35. I wouldn't do it. It's literally two words. It says, Jesus wept. So it's, Jesus did cry. We obviously know that. You see that? Boom. Congratulations. And so Jesus cried as an adult. So why would he not cry as a baby right after he's born? I mean, like, what? People, when they hear that, they think like, oh yeah, Jesus didn't cry, that makes sense. If he cried, that would mean something is wrong, you know, but it wasn't wrong. Everything was perfect that night. It wasn't exactly perfect that night. I mean, they were in the middle of probably the kitchen, animals and grandparents and kiddies running around everywhere, because this was the census, so, you know, everyone was there, like literally everyone in the family. It was all crazy, and so of course little baby Jesus would be crying. He was a baby. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And it's nowhere in the Bible that he didn't cry. It's just an idea that we have with no actual basis. And now, why am I bothering to bring any of this up at all? Like, cool, it's good to know. Okay, maybe he thinks this. Great, he's Lathan's son. We'll let him speak. Whatever, whatever. The reason I'm bringing it up, there are two main reasons. First of all, this one is for all the mothers or the parents in the room or anything like that who want to have the perfect Christmas. And, you know, you don't want anything to go wrong. Everything's got to be spotless. Every kid has got to love every present they get, you know. You know, you're so nervous. You're like, everything has to go right. That's crooked right there on the wall. Somebody fix that. Literally, the first Christmas, the one where Jesus was actually born, the best one of all, was super insane. It was the only perfect thing about it was that he was born. But even he was crying. Like, they were in the kitchen at night. Everything was crazy. It's totally amazingly fine for your Christmas to be off the rails insane, okay? It's fine for things to go wrong. And that is, like, true, okay? And the second reason is that it shows God wanted Jesus to be born so desperately, and for Christmas to actually happen, he wanted it all so desperately that he let Joseph and Mary and Jesus, all his beloved, he let them go through all that stuff just for us, because they could have had a perfect birth, you know? Everyone's like, oh yeah, Jesus was born, it was perfect, he didn't cry, the little baby lambs all swallowed up to him and nuzzled him with their cheeks. But God didn't do that. Instead, he let Jesus be born in the middle of all that imperfection, not even to mention King Herod, who was like, you know, oh, I can't let Jesus be born. Go find him. Don't let it happen. The situation wasn't perfect. There was very little about the situation that was like, good, I'd say, let alone perfect. I mean, remember, again, everyone in the family, like, there's that Joseph and Mary. You just stay in the kitchen, okay? I mean, but God was like, no, this needs to happen. I want this to happen for all my people. And so he let Jesus be born in the middle of that to show that perfect things can still happen in the midst of craziness or imperfect things. And that is my message.